Roger Williams University is hosting a crisis management seminar on May 3rd at their Providence campus. Crises, whether a natural disaster, cyber attack, or financial instability, can have severe repercussions if not handled properly. This is where crisis management plays a pivotal role. Join Roger Williams MBA students and expert speakers to learn how to prepare for the unexpected. The program is totally free and open to the public. You can register online at rwu.edu/events/crisis-management-symposium.
This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.
Welcome to another edition of the Bartholomew Town Podcast. I'm your host, Bill Bartholomew. From our Providence, Rhode Island studios, I sit down with Rhode Island National Organization for Women Chapter President, Hillary Levy Friedman. Hillary Levy Friedman teaches courses at Brown University's Department of Education and is also an author and the president of the Rhode Island chapter of the National Organization for Women. I was curious as to Professor Friedman's opinion on what are the most pressing issues facing women in Rhode Island. Our conversation addressed a multitude of areas that RI Now are focused on, from reproductive rights to gender-based economic disparities to transgender rights and protections. You may find each of my in-depth interviews with Rhode Island politicians, media members, artists, and beyond at BartholomewTown.com, RIPodcast.com, or on Apple Podcasts. Had a lot of fun with Professor Friedman here at the Loft, getting into some serious issues, starting with what RI Now are up to right now. All right, let's get right into your work with RI Now. We're at a state where a lot of people don't realize that constitutionally, a woman's right to choose is not protected at the state level. Is that kind of the main area that you're concentrating on right now, advocating for that specific change in the Rhode Island state constitution?
Well, actually, constitutionally, Rhode Island has a very small and short constitution historically, so many things are not in there. So the Reproductive Health Care Act, which I believe is the main thing you're referring to, doesn't make any constitutional changes, but it makes statutory changes to protect a woman's right to choose if anything were to change at the federal level. So that is certainly a major part of Rhode Island Now's agenda, but we are a multi-issue women's organization and for all. Like, we're advocating for equality for all, whether that's men or women. Obviously, women are a major focus. So reproductive freedom is part of our agenda, but it's not the only thing. We're also very concerned about violence against women in all forms. So that would include sexual harassment, which is a big topic these days. We're concerned about economic justice and opportunity for all. We're concerned about ending racism and then also protecting LGBTQ rights as well. So we're really, you know, the lingo today would be we're a very intersectional organization, but we're multi-issue. But yes, you are correct that reproductive freedom is a big part of that. So it's not just protecting women's right to choose, but also contraception and issues like that.
What do you find is the biggest roadblock in Rhode Island to protecting a woman's right to choose? Do you feel it comes from the Catholic tradition that's here in this state, or a version of sort of a democratic conservatism that exists in a lot of powerful positions in the state? Where do you feel, why are we in this spot to begin with?
So I think if we're going to, I could answer that question on both the micro and the macro level. So the micro, the very practical at the moment, if I had to point to one specific reason why we cannot get the Reproductive Health Care Act passed, it's because of leadership in the legislature. And I know there's a lot of focus on the House, but we also don't want to forget about the Senate. So in particularly, we have a very powerful Speaker of the House. So regardless of who that individual is, that position is extremely powerful in this state. And so if that it's always happened to be a male. So if he is not interested in advancing particular legislation, or he's trying to protect particular members or advance other parts of his agenda, then that's not going to happen. So at the moment, that is why we have not seen movement on this particular bill. Now, you raise a very interesting question about what's going on in the state more generally, that we don't have a great rating from NARAL on reproductive issues. And so you mentioned Catholicism. I mean, I do think that's part of it. We live in the most Catholic state in the country, which is amazing, and it's great. We are a state that was founded on the basis of religious freedom awesome. But also, we live in a country where there should be separation of church and state. But so obviously, you know, those, the intersection of those institutions has probably helped, certainly helped to create an environment in which we are not at the forefront of issues related to reproductive freedom.
Yeah, I found it interesting. One of the more progressive candidates that came, but was put forth this last Democratic primary, Patricia Fonts, who challenged Senator Sheldon Whitehouse, seemingly from the left, but her Catholic background forced her to take basically an anti-choice, or at the very, you know, the best case scenario, a quiet position. And, you know, you just see that blend here and think, wow, that's unfortunate.
Well, look, anybody can, people are welcome to believe whatever they'd like to believe, right? And people who are working on the Reproductive Health Care Act and on many other issues that impact people's faith, we're not trying to legislate faith, right? We're saying you can behave in such a way as what you want to do, but you can't tell other people what to do. And we have many Catholic legislators who are very strong in their personal belief. I mean, I could point to the governor, Gina Raimondo, in particular, who may personally have different beliefs, but who recognize that not everybody shares those beliefs. And so that's not, you know, I would think that's not the way we want to represent people, or that's the best way to represent people.
Right. It's like the cross section of like libertarianism and progressivism, you know what I mean? Just
yes,
just let people be.
Yes. All and right. Fix our roads.
Fix our roads, yeah.
That's the libertarian position, right? Next thing we're tackling, I would say, after marriage equality, it's become the major issue: transgender rights, identity. It's an issue within the gay community as well. And so, again, we're just saying let people be who they are, and it's not hurting you, right? Like, yeah. That's one of the confusings to me about many of the things that we discuss, you know, both in the state and especially nationally, that just because someone makes a different choice than you doesn't mean that that's impacting you in a negative way. I can appreciate on some economic issues that people might interpret some of those things differently, but you know, I just like to remind people that a rising tide lifts all boats.
Bingo. Violence against women is always been there in history. It's there now. It's subtle. It is a two-way street sometimes, but I think that if you examine human history, it is more of a one-way street of males inflicting violence upon females, whether that's physical or just sort of setting a tone, if you will. I feel more than ever in my life, now I'm 34, it seems like people are able to be freer now. But at the same time, we've got a long way to go, right?
Yes. I mean, I like that you have a positive message, because I do feel like, you know, yeah, things are good, and we talk about things that are wrong in the state. By the same token, like, things are good in the state. So as someone older and wiser,
yes, thank you.
I'm 38. I don't know. Ooh. You're from the generation. Do you remember the movie Clueless? And
yeah.
Cher says, "When's your birthday?" And she's 4 months older. She's like, someone older and wiser.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, but no, things have certainly changed. I mean, I think back to my own high school days. I went to an all-girls school in another state. I grew up in Michigan. I mean, issues around homosexuality and all of that were much different than they are today, although we would do well to remember that in many parts of the country, that is still not true. So we've come a long way. We still have a long way to go. I think that there are various aspects, you know, this is my sociologist hat, that there are some biases that are built into the system, and those are hard to legislate away. So it's not even like we can come up with legislation that's going to change things. I mean, some of it is changing hearts and minds, and that doesn't happen overnight. That doesn't happen in a week. It doesn't happen in a year. And we have to be patient. Sometimes it's generational change. I mean, when I look at middle school students, high school students, like, they have very different perspectives on things as well. And in the same way, yeah, that we want equality and representation for all different types of people, that also has to do with age. And so all of those things are important. And I think, A, the more people are represented, but if they're not represented, if they can have their voices heard, have a forum where they feel like not only they can speak, but also that they can be heard, that's extraordinarily important.
I completely agree. I referee soccer. And I referee some, I don't do it much anymore, but I was refereeing a lot of like youth games when I first moved back to Rhode Island. And I noticed that a lot of the teams were co-ed, and a lot of the players who were killing it were females. And I think that's great, you know, because there's this notion of separate in sport, in music, and whatever. There's a different approach to teaching a female bass or drums. There's an assumption that they're going to hit it less hard or something like that. And I think that's fundamentally flawed. My wife and I play in a band together, and yeah, I'll hold the door, and if she needs me to carry something, I'll do it. But I don't like to carry her amp for her because, you know, let her carry it. She wants to. You know what I mean? Let's be equal at that level too.
Yeah.
I feel like we're making strides there of getting rid of some of these invented gender role assignments we have.
Well, now you're really veering into my academic work.
Ooh, nice.
Because my first book, Playing to Win, Raising Children in a Competitive Culture, was partly about youth soccer.
Whoa.
So it was okay. About families with elementary school age kids and their participation in particular activities in the arts, in athletics, and then in academic stuff as well. Oh. So I do have to caution that one of the things here, well, two cautions. One is we have many different ways of being a young girl today, and we still don't offer young men as many choices. I think that is starting to change. I'm the mother of two boys, so I'm like super conscious of this.
Yeah.
But we're way more likely to celebrate like girl power or the girl playing on the boys team and less the opposite direction. So that's one thing. The second thing is in my work, I find like the girls who are like super involved in the soccer and doing the co-ed soccer teams and all of that, they tend to come from a particular class background and they tend to be more upper middle class. And so if we think long term, if we're talking about generational change, like what does that mean for the next generation? And if only girls who have like families who are super involved, both financially or in terms of time, like how does that play out later is a concern, personal concern of mine and an academic concern of mine as well. So obviously things, whenever we see social change, it impacts different groups and class is a big part of that at different levels, but we have to like be conscious of that and think about that as well. But yes, like go girls, go girl power. I'm in the class I'm teaching this semester. I have a student who's done her final paper on girls who play on boys teams, soccer teams. Actually. Yeah. So super on topic.
Yeah. There's a real fascinating example of that. The Block Island High School is co-ed. Their sports teams are co-eds and they won a regional championship last year and had an amazing team, and their entire backfield was female, and they're going up against all male teams and crushing them.
Wow.
You know, no handicap, no, hey, don't hit that girl hard, you know, real soccer, real physical soccer. And seeing that over the last few years has just kind of reinforced my opinion. I grew up, I was the only boy. I had my dad, but he worked a lot. So I had my mom, my aunt, my female cousins. I was surrounded by women and played sports and did physical activity. So I've always thought that that daintiness idea is completely artificial. I mean, yes, if you had the fastest male in the world race the fastest female in the world or put on football pads and go head to head, yeah, I get it. But we're pretty much the same mechanical species with the same goals and abilities.
Right. I mean, puberty is the problematic thing when it comes to sports in particular. Yeah. And to circle back to transgender stuff, there's a lot of complicated discussions going on right now about transgender students' participation in sports and different policies at the high school level versus the collegiate level. One thing that's interesting, and I didn't know that about Block Island High School, so I'm going to have to check that out. In particular in Massachusetts, if there's ever a boy who plays on a girls' team, so I'll just take an example because field hockey in other parts of the country is a thought of as a male sport as well. In this country, it's pretty much thought of as a girl sport. So if a male ever plays on a girls' team, just one, that's no longer considered a girls' team. Whereas like half of a male team can be females and it's still considered a male team.
Wow.
So we're not – that just goes to say like, yes, a lot has changed. By the same token, we still have work to do.
Plenty of work right there at the fundamental level.
Yes.
Are you pleased that in Rhode Island we have a female governor? Is that significant to you or is that – like some people have dismissed the idea that there's an all-female majority – Providence City Council. Well, they vote differently anyway. Who cares? But is there something symbolic about that or even more than symbolic about having Governor Raimondo at the top of the state offices?
I mean, I think it certainly matters for women who are looking for either in, you know, grown women who are looking for a mentor or little girls who are thinking about what's possible in the world. I mean, if you looked at the leaders at the state house, as you mentioned, they're all male. you know, before this election cycle, the governor was one of two female Democratic governors in the country, yeah. and there were only six total female governors in the entire country. So that's not close to equal, right?
No. Like,
and so in this state, you know, 51% of Rhode Island identifies as female. So yeah, that totally makes sense to me. And in fact, we have some work to do in terms of equal representation at the state house. And, you know, again, going back to what we said at the beginning, who we are informs a lot of the issues that matter a lot to us. And so if we just don't see particular groups represented, that's a problem. But, you know, Governor Raimondo is not just a leader in the state. Like, she's a leader in the nation. She was just elected chair of the Democratic Governors Association. And so I think, what is it, like all the major Democratic leader positions nationally right now are female, and she's
right.
one of those four.
Yep.
So, yeah, that matters. And, you know, I think back to when people say, you know, when are you going to be happy about the women on the Supreme Court? You know, there's a famous, you know, when there are nine, because for hundreds of years, literally hundreds of years, the Supreme Court was all male. So, you know, I often say we're not even asking for like 100% female. We're just
right.
asking for equal representation. So
right. it's not payback here. It's just
no.
straighten it out. Wake
no.
up. Yeah.
That's generally not the quote unquote female way to do things.
Right.
Yeah. To go back to some traditional notions.
Totally. Are you open to electing female candidates who are not Democrats or working on their behalf if they have positions that for the most part align with your goals, particularly on abortion rights?
Yes. So we are an issues-based organization, Rhode Island Now. We are officially nonpartisan. It happens to be that in this particular moment, the issues we care about tend to be affiliated with one party more than the other. But my goodness, we would hope that equality is not a partisan issue, right?
Yeah.
Like, we want that to just be an issue everybody is working toward. So I'll give
right.
you an example, though. Claudine Schneider, who used to be a congresswoman from Rhode Island, you know, is very much aligned on lots of the issues. When she was here campaigning for Senator Whitehouse this past election cycle, like, we did a dinner with her that was a fundraiser for Rhode Island Now. So we are focused on issues. And of course, like, if there's a candidate who runs as a Republican, perhaps because of tax reasons, you know, whatever it is,
yeah,
like
the
whatever
fiscal
it is,
conservative,
right?
Yeah,
like that's a very different issue. We just haven't had candidates like that recently.
Yeah, it's become more and more extreme, and people play into those fears. I think, especially on that issue, people play into that on the right to try to spark some kind of, you know, fear of a cultural revolution. It's sickening. And I wonder if the Republican Party as a whole, at least in Rhode Island, will ever say, you know what, let's just move past all that stuff and move on to issues and actually have a debate about those and let human rights issues not be debatable anymore.
Well, that would be our hope. I mean, I do feel like it's particularly difficult in this moment because of who's in the White House
yep.
and who is the leader of the Republican Party. And unless people are willing to really denounce Donald Trump's, you know, hate-filled rhetoric, that's, you know, it's hard to move past that.
Yeah.
But certainly, like, we think about, I mean, George H.W. Bush was not perfect. Nobody is. He was not great on a lot of gay rights issues and HIV and AIDS.
Yep.
But in other ways, he was a very good leader, and he was committed to helping people. And that's a very different perspective.
Absolutely.
That we see.
Most definitely. I first saw you, I certainly read some of your work, maybe even just on Twitter or whatever, but I first saw you like a month and a half ago now at the day after the midterm at a panel discussion, or maybe it was actually
right
it was right before. That was a different panel.
Yeah.
At the
yes.
Watson Institute. Yeah. and I thought it was a fascinating discussion. I really enjoyed your performance, if you will, at that discussion quite a bit. But I wondered, Dan York from WPRO, he was there and he was sort of presented as the conservative voice. And it kind of struck me because I was thinking to myself, wow, there's a lot of criticism of academia as a whole. You know, my wife's a student at Brown and right now and RISD, and I went to URI even there where it's kind of bro-ish and this, that, and the other. There's still obviously liberal strains. Do you feel like there's – because Dan York is certainly not Mr. Conservative in the grand scheme of things either. You know, do you feel like there's a balanced perspective on college campus right now, or is it overwhelmingly to the left, such as that panel where you had three people who were left and then the person who was to the right really is at best a moderate right? Do you feel like that's a problem right now?
Well, so we perhaps in Rhode Island more generally, right, don't have as equal voices on both sides.
Right.
But I will say this because I wear a Taubman hat. So the Taubman Center for American Policy and Politics at Watson, it sits within Watson at Brown. We really go out of our way to get different voices. I mean, we had Jeb Bush come last year. Recently, the president of Mexico was here. He's definitely a more conservative voice. Right. We've had panels with both Tom Perez, current chair of the DNC, and Michael Steele, former chair of the RNC. Coming up, we have Raihan Salon coming, who's a more conservative political pundit, talking head. And so there's a real focus and a real care to get those different perspectives. I think when you're talking about Rhode Island in particular, right, like you just look at the numbers, right? Like Democrats run the state. We're solidly blue. At the state
4%
level,
of people got behind Joe Trillo. I mean, that's relieving right there, you know.
But, you know, so that's a more complicated question, I feel like,
right,
at the Rhode Island state level. I mean, certainly compared to other people, Dan York puts himself out there as being, I would say, more as a libertarian, actually, but as more conservative. But, you know, nobody, he takes no prisoners, right? Like, his job is to agitate and get people talking and get people worked up. And so,
right.
I wouldn't want to hazard a guess as to his actual personal politics. I think they're probably more complicated than you or I might think.
That's probably true. You know, and he definitely oftentimes will cite his Catholic background or this, that, the other, and kind of like cut off an issue on air sometimes, I think. And you wonder, and that may be a good thing too. You know, his personal views don't always affect the issues of the day, I guess.
Right. I mean, we'd like to think that we have a free and unbiased press, right?
Yeah. Yeah, right.
So I'll leave that there.
It's outrageous to think that a person's own viewpoint won't make it into their work. How could it not? If it doesn't, then it's robotic. It's like Orwell's, you know, the Times or whatever.
Right. I mean, and I'm a qualitative sociologist, so part of like when I'm talking to people, like I am the research instrument. Like, of course, my perspectives color what somebody says to me. The onus and the responsibility is to be aware of the ways in which those biases can affect, right? Like we know we can't make that completely go away, and probably we shouldn't, right? Like we all bring something different to the table, but it's being aware of it and being able to figure out the ways to either mitigate that or take that into account in positive ways.
Yeah. Is there a favorite media source that you have in Rhode Island, like a favorite reporter or anything like that, that is kind of like your go-to?
Well, I'll say that every Friday night and Saturday morning, there's three pieces of required reading. So there's the Ted Nesi, Nesi's notes. Ian Donis's, well, what's it called now? The Public?
The Public's Radio.
The Public's Radio, and then Steve Alquist from Uprise RI.
Yeah.
So they do this roundup, and that's all three of them are just required reading for me over the weekend.
Same here, yeah. Do you like A Lively Experiment?
Sometimes I watch that as well. I have a friend who I know you've had on before, Professor June Speakman,
yes,
who is frequently on. So,
yeah.
But I'm a omnivore in terms of my media consumption, in terms of my own, you know, personal pop culture consumption. So I like to spread it out. But, you know, I think for anybody interested in Rhode Island politics, in terms of reading, those three things are required if I put together a syllabus.
Absolutely. And if you want to zero in on Providence, I think Dan McGowan's Facebook group.
Yes.
Go join that group.
Yes, basically. Definitely. He does not tolerate swearing, though.
No, he doesn't. Or really any kind of like, you know, bullying, anything like that. It makes it fun and it eliminates some of the characters that pop up on some of the other Facebook groups. And you go, oh, that guy. All right.
Right.
You know, you're not there. Good.
Right.
My last question would be, where are you headed? You know, you're in this position in your life. You're not 40 yet, and you've already accomplished quite a bit. That's a specific place to be at. You know, you have a lot of foundation and an identity that's pretty significant. But at the same time, you know, you'll probably live for another 70 years.
Well, goodness, here's some what so I cannot.
So what's next for you?
Well, first of all, I'm trying to make it through the holiday season.
Yeah.
I have a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old, and we celebrate Hanukkah, sure, and we celebrate Christmas, and they have January birthdays. So I've got, you know, that's a big part of my identity right now is,
yep,
my boys, who I mentioned. I'm also working on a second book, so that should be out next spring. So not spring 2019, but spring 2020. So we did talk about that, but that's about a large amount of work that I've done on beauty pageants, and it's linking beauty pageants to various American institutions, but sort of telling the story of American feminism through the lens of beauty pageants. So some unexpected things, some, wow, things people might not know. So that's a big thing. And I'm really excited about the work that we're doing with Rhode Island Now. I think that we're out there and being advocates. One of the things I didn't get to mention, which I'd love to mention, is that, yes, we're focused on reproductive freedom and sexual harassment, but I mentioned economic opportunity as part of our package as well. And so this year we are very excited to get behind universal pre-K efforts. We think the work that the governor is doing to lead that, in terms of educational inequality, and we're very concerned about quality, universal pre-K, I would say, but it has implications also for workforce development. You know, most of that workforce is comprised of women. So that's a really important issue to us. And I think it's at the heart of a lot of the intersectional work that we want to do. So I would say that will be a priority for us over the next year. And then, yeah, I'm a professor. I got to go grade papers after this.
I've nice.
Got 17, 15-page papers to work on. So I'm a busy lady, but the work is important to me. And we're in a really important moment, I feel like, in my lifetime, in the country. And so I think giving people an opportunity to have their voices heard and helping give them tools that they can express themselves is my priority right now.
That's so cool to hear that. I feel like that was something that I learned a lot from this election season about my own, you know, plans for the future or whatever. It should be more about opening up other voices than speaking on behalf of someone. I think we saw a lot of that over the last few years. Even Occupy Wall Street in a lot of ways came from speaking on behalf of, you know, this marginalized group of people, which is very large, but a lot of times it was people who could afford to not go to work all day and play djembe outside of a bank. So it's about uplifting the right people and getting the real authentic voices into the General Assembly or operating pre-K or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. And if I want to put a positive spin on it,
because, yes,
I know we can criticize the Rhode Island State House because it's part-time and it's only Tuesday through Thursday and it starts late. But at the same time, if you know, people might still be working at 4, but they might not be working at 9 p.m.
Right.
And so I think there are ways in which we can capitalize on that. Like I gave a talk at a high school recently, and like 5 of those high school students came to our legislative committee meeting, which we had last, yeah, night. And that's awesome. And like they're on a totally different time schedule than I am, heavens knows. But that's great because then they can fill in where a lot of people who are retired and can be super active at the State House at different times can't. And so I think the moral of all of this is that it takes a village, and I want to be working as part of that village, and I'm like one person within that, and I'd love to just see that village continue to expand.
As always, thanks so much for joining the conversation here on the Bartholomew Town Podcast. Until next time, I'm Bill Bartholomew. We'll talk soon.
At HealthSource RI for Employers, we provide access to health insurance to more than 1,100 local businesses and nonprofits, and 96% of them renew through us every year. Maybe it's our choice of 19 different health plans, our 10 years of customizing solutions, or our one local team of dedicated experts helping employers find quality health insurance. See how our numbers stack up for you. Learn more at healthsourceri.com/employers.